everyone. I'm Gary Nall. This is going to be an empowering hour. I'm beginning a new series of commentaries, or, if you like, essays, on the human condition, trying to make sense of the world we live in, and looking both at history and current events, and saying, can we change directions from what seems like a very maniacal, if not real existential threat to our freedoms? This is not about left and right, about red and blue. That's a misdirection. I oppose both, because all of these people had at different times, they have been complicit in what we now see is a failure of the institutions to serve the needs of the average person. So I believe it's time for a more measured, introspective, and empirical understanding of what we're dealing with. Otherwise, then the elections will not make a difference, because there's always going to be people behind the scenes more powerful than those who've been elected. We're going to get to that in the first of the commentaries in just a few moments, but first we go to the latest on health and healing. And keep in mind, and this should teach us something, what is the one thing that will make a difference in your life? How long you live, and the quality of that life. Whether you suffer from multiple illnesses, you're always on medications, you're in and out of the hospital, you're facing bankruptcy, you can't pay all the bills, and you suffer. Wouldn't you imagine that should be the number one priority, especially after the lockdowns and COVID? Keeping Americans healthy, especially those who are most vulnerable, the children and seniors. But it's not. It's not even on the list of priorities. So even those in power have been so clever, they have diffused what should be something that should ignite all of our indignation. A country that profits off getting us sick, look at all the ads, show me the ads that are really health-promoting versus those that promote disease, and the peer-reviewed scientific literature that supports that, and then show me where we've had any of our major policymakers or opinion leaders stand up and say, this is wrong, this promotes disease, this promotes harm, so let's go in the other direction and make us healthy. Even if we're not wealthy, healthy. Just imagine how that would change how a person feels about the day they're in if they knew that pain, suffering, fatigue, or some illness, cancer that they have is not going to get all their focus today, but other more important issues as well. So what I try to do and have successfully for a long time is provide you with the actual science to support making positive changes. For example, in our first study today, which comes from NIZAM Institute of Medical Science in India, it's about an herb, and that herb is called ashwagandha, ashwagandha. So people experiencing knee joint pain and discomfort, particularly those with knee or osteoarthritis, may find relief in the Ayurvedic medicine called ashwagandha. And a study published in the Journal of Ayurvedic and Integrative Medicine, a peer-reviewed journal, found that the root and leaf extracts of ashwagandha relieve knee pain and discomfort caused by osteoarthritis, but with no adverse side effects. Well, normally in the United States, someone would take an anti-inflammatory, something like an analgesic or non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. And historically, those have been extremely deadly. Aspirin's extremely deadly. Will it thin your blood? Yes, it will. But why is it after 50 years of telling people to take aspirin a day if they have high blood pressure or they have some form of heart condition, they are now saying, oh, but no, take the baby aspirin, which is less than half the dose. Well, did they tell you that how many tens of thousands of Americans alone were dying each year from the effect of the aspirin causing intestinal bleeding? No. No. And did the FDA ban Vioxx, the most deadly drug that has been given in the last 100 years? No. No, so somewhere in the neighborhood of between, on the very low end, 60,000, on the high end, 500,000 people died. All because it was recommended by rheumatologists and general practitioners to relieve pain, especially arthritis pain. But what if you said, okay, I can thin your blood without something that can actually cause you adverse effects, including death? What if I could give you something all natural? The first thing that's going to happen is no one's going to use it. No one in medicine is going to use it. A tiny fraction of doctors, maybe 2,000 in the whole country, use what we call complementary medicine, but there are 900,000 doctors. So clearly, the other doctors are aware of the benefits of traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, chiropractic care, acupuncture, etc. They're just not using it, except sometimes on themselves. You would not believe how many doctors and their families have asked me to help them with conditions, but then they would say that I can't use this in my own practice because it would go against my own best interest, meaning their livelihood. So that tells us something, you know, and it's important. But here we have something, it's a natural anti-inflammatory that does no harm, ashwagandha. So that's just to let you know that if you have pain, 125 milligrams of ashwagandha extract could make a big difference over a 12-week period. But there's something else that ashwagandha does. According to the Subhawana Hospital in India, 8 weeks of supplementing with ashwagandha root extract were associated with normalizing of the thyroid-stimulating hormone, TSH, serum thyroxine, TH4, and serum triiodothyronine, T3, in people with elevated TSH levels. Quote, the results of the present study are in accordance with previous studies. This was published in the Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine, a major peer-reviewed journal I published in it. Quote, the results indicate a possible role for ashwagandha in regulating HPT axis. The anti-stress cortisol-lowering effect of ashwagandha may provide a suitable explanation for the current outcome, end quote. And this was a double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled study that showed this. And so, no, if you suffer from subclinical hyperthyroidism, I would definitely look into this. Now, from Washington University School of Medicine comes a study about enzymes in broccoli and cucumbers and avocados reverses cellular aging. Researchers have zeroed in on an enzyme found in natural foods like broccoli and cucumbers that can slow the chronic conditions that come with age. Scientists at Washington University School of Medicine have shown that supplementing healthy mice with a natural compound called NMN, that's N as in Nancy, M as in Mary, N as in Nancy, can compensate for this loss of energy production, reducing typical signs of aging such as gradual weight gain, loss of insulin sensitivity, and declines in physical activity. The compound is called nicotinamide mononucleotide, and it's involved in producing another compound that is critical for energy metabolism. And when they gave normal aging mice infusions of this nicotinamide product, then a lot of the problems associated with aging disappeared. The animals given this did not gain as much weight. They were able to convert food into energy more efficiently. Their blood sugar was better. Even their eyesight improved. So there we have something. And an MD, PhD, a professor of developmental biology and medicine, a Dr. Imai, was the one who created this. That's good. So it is clear that more pieces of the puzzle of preventing disease, slowing down the aging process, and reversing it are becoming available. Now, from the Gunzhou Medical University in China comes a study. It's based upon a meta. That means many studies. They looked at certain factors to see, are there common denominators that we can use about the efficacy of acupuncture for vascular cognitive impairment associated with cerebral small vessel disease. And to systematically evaluate the efficacy and safety of acupuncture in the treatment of vascular cognitive impairment associated with cerebral small vessel disease, and to provide a theoretical basis for clinical acupuncture treatments, they took a look at 10 articles, and they looked at about 761 patients and who received acupuncture. The conclusions was acupuncture alone and acupuncture alongside other therapies are superior to non-acupuncture-based therapies in the treatment of this condition. That's good news. Also from Telethon Kids Institute in Australia, an article in the Journal of Allergy and Clinical Immunology showed that vitamin D deficiency is more likely to develop asthma cases. This was a 10-year study. They followed children at age, well, earlier on, up for 10 years, and this is what they found. So it's so easy to get vitamin D3. Make sure your child is getting it. It can help prevent asthma. And from GreenMedInfo, Sarah G., an article published in the European Journal of Neurology shows that to boost your memory and regenerate neurons, you can do this with an ancient plant. In fact, this ancient plant is probably one of the oldest plants on Earth. It's called a living fossil, and it's the ginkgo biloba, G-I-N-G-K-O, ginkgo biloba, B-I-L-O-B-A. By the way, it is the oldest known tree in existence. And it's poetic how this plant has also been used to promote long life as both a food and medicine in traditional cultures as well. Well, a published paper in the Journal of Neurology described a 24-week randomized placebo-controlled double-blind study showing an extract of this plant was as clinically effective as the blockbuster Donzapil for mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease, with none of the side effects. How about that? In fact, they've identified at least 50 distinct beneficial physiological actions from ginkgo biloba. And it's known to benefit over 100 different diseases because ginkgo can stimulate brain-derived neurotrophic factor, or what is called BDNF, a protein in the brain, and in the peripheral nervous system, which is essential for the regulation, growth, and survival of brain cells, and which is especially important for long-term memory. So, if you want better cognition, better improved brain, ginkgo biloba makes a difference. There was also an article in Cell and Molecular Neurobiology entitled Ginkgo Biloba Extract Enhances Differentiation and Performance of Neural Stem Cells in Mice. So you see, a lot of good. That's the latest on health and healing. And by the way, you can get your newsletter with the with all the information that you need on health and healing every single morning. It's not difficult to get. And so all you have to do is you'll go to GaryNall.com. Scroll down to where it says newsletter. It'll take you to GaryNall.substack.com. And let me just see. I'll just give you an example if I still have it on my computer here. I get so many emails. But there is a talk this morning all about the different nutrients that can enhance our well-being. So I get it every morning. And so I suggest you do as well. Because if you just like health and nutrition, it's the place to go. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. I'm going to start my commentary today in a little different way, from an empirical point of view. And by the way, if you want to know where empiricism originated, it was Francis Bacon. He's been called the father of scientific method, and yet he wasn't a scientist. He didn't live a long life. I think it was around 65 years of age. He lived between the 1561 and I think it was, 1626. He was known as a philosopher of science, and he was an essayist. But what made him unique, in my personal opinion, was his empiricism, which holds that do not judge something as right or wrong until you've allowed all of your human and natural sensory experiences to be judged and understood. So that's important. And we don't frequently do that today because we have scientism, which is a form of new Darwinism, scientific Darwinism, where if you can't prove it in a test tube or under study that you've designed, it doesn't exist. Hence, you see this mammoth change in much of the scientific community towards atheism. And I'll have a debate with anyone. I've had debates. I've had debates with Linus Pauling, with some really heavy hitters on this subject, because I believe they didn't look at what's right in front of all of us. But that's for a different day. In any case, I'll just give you an example of this. One day, a person, the true story, one day two women came into my office, one looking a little hippie and the other very straight business suit. One was the older sister, older by a year, and she was very tense, very straightforward, hand me a whole list. Out of 100 foods, there was 94 she could no longer consume because she'd get allergic reactions. And before I could ask her anything, she said, look, I've been to every straight doctor and every holistic doctor. No one has an answer. They just keep saying, well, you know, this is all you can eat, this is all you can drink. And it keeps getting less and less and less. I'm losing weight, and I'm nervous about this. Now, based upon the idea that she wasn't there of her own volition, but her sister insisted upon her coming, and she knew that she had a problem, but she couldn't see herself as being a part of it, as if it were some disease that she caught that made her allergic. And I said, well, what if you looked at the fact or the idea that you don't have an allergy as such, but rather you have a defective immune system, in part due to stress, and that defective immune system now does not allow your body to tolerate things that it normally would live in homeostasis or balance with. Well, I don't understand that. That doesn't make any sense to me. She came as a real reductionist. Turns out she's a lawyer on Wall Street, so I can understand her perception. And so I said, then I'm not the person to help you. And I recommended a few holistic doctors. And about a month later, she comes back with her sister and that nothing else had worked. Now she's down to only 3 foods she can eat. So that's when I suggested through, again, this is empiricism, that maybe the reality was not her immune system, but her behavior. And maybe her behavior was that she was bringing a mind that had been so conditioned to believe in absolutism, black and white, and had been such an overachiever that she couldn't realize the arc of all life, from the transition from knowing nothing to what we know and then mastering it and then using it or not using it to continue in our life or to begin again and master something else. This all had to do with surrendering the need for control over our environment and impressing people that they should be in control over our environment or be deferred to because of what they've achieved, as if everything was pure meritocracy and nothing at the human or spiritual level. And once again, we had that. She just wanted to get up and walk out. And then her sister says, hold on a second. Before you walk out the door, which you're always doing, as long as we've been alive, all you do is, you know, you want to have the first word, the last word, and no discussion. When was the last time you had a good relationship? There's no man good enough in your world. All you can do is get a relationship and then demean them and then complain about there are no good men left. The world is full of good men. Are you the right person? Are you a good person to be in a relationship? And then they got into this whole argument. I'm just sitting there wondering, where's this going to go? But it got to the place where we're all about competing for the father's attention. And the father, for whatever reason, chose the younger daughter because she was more playful, she wasn't competitive, she was just more fun. Once that door was opened and she had a chance through her sister's perceptional eyes to see the cause of her problems is not something right now with being allergic to something, it's something she has been manifesting her whole adult life. I believe she was about 41. And so controlling everything and micro-controlling and controlling to where you're crushing the life out of everything, that's not the right way to approach anything. You got to surrender. Love Love releases. Love, you expand consciousness, expand awareness, and fear constricts. So if you live your life thinking you're never good enough and you're going to show everyone by being the perfectionist, make everyone else feel uncomfortable about themselves or inadequate to be in your presence, then you're going to end up with a lot of problems sooner or later. And today, if you were to ask that person, and by the way, she actually changed everything. I put her on a protocol that had nothing to do with diet whatsoever, but it was a happiness protocol. And she and her sister and I watched a video called Overcoming the Dark Side. That's where you got to start. Like it or not, in my experience, at least for the people I know, yours could be different and you could be correct in yours, but I always start by having a person face their worst enemy, their insecurity and their fears that continue to feed nonstop like a spitting cobra. Just different day, same crisis, regurgitated ad nauseum. That doesn't change it. And it just wears everyone out in your life. If they don't maladapt to your, negative behavior, then they drop out of your life. And people are pretty patient until they just don't want to be around negativity anymore. But think of how many people want to be around negativity today when everything we do, we seem to be criticized for. Just being Caucasian, you're criticized. Think of how many people have committed suicide. And there are those who have because they no longer felt worthy of living because they've been inculcated and indoctrinated over the internet and in schools that there's something wrong with you, that you can never outgrow, you can never apologize. There's no amount of reparation that can settle this. And then, wow, you're a young person, and think of what that does to the mind. Well, I'm going to address that today and show you that we have not invited the people who have been adversely affected by others' need to dominate into an honest, open, and civil discussion. But it begins. In any case, I said that was an example of empiricism, but also over the weekend, I went to a farmer's market, and it was just one of those days where three people at different times came over and started conversations. I didn't know these people, but they had moved down, one from California, who listens on KPFK, one from the New York area, and one from New Jersey, who listened over Perrin and BAI. What brought you here? Well, a lot of stuff. But you're in your 40s, I guess. One was in her 40s, one was 60s. What brought you to this community? Well, first of all, it's safe. I can walk anywhere. The people are nice. I can have a conversation without people yelling and screaming. And I don't feel like somehow I'm a second-class person. What was interesting is they all talked about, who they were going to vote for. I was not asking, but they were volunteering. They wanted to get into these conversations, and they all have been vaccinated. Here's what's interesting. All three have been vaccinated. One had been vaccinated four times, and now they're suffering the side effects. But they don't feel yet betrayed by the people who encouraged them to vaccinate and to look at anyone who didn't as a second-class citizen, in effect, having a modern-day medical apartheid McCarthyism that we've been experiencing in this country, and unfairly so. As I said, never criticize someone for getting a vaccine because now they're going to be living with the fear, what about the side effects? And brother, you're going to hear the side effects. A brand new study was just reported about an hour ago. Whoa, the CDC was just sued based upon how many numbers of people actually went to the hospital after getting this. It was a report that no one knew existed, but the government was keeping it. The number is staggering. It's out of this universe. And I'm not going to go into it. We're verifying the final details of its accuracy, but I'm going to report on it later. In any case, so now you've been betrayed. Are you going to keep believing the people that betrayed you? The people who created our problems today, both blue and red in their politics, they created all the problems we're faced with today. The average person did not create the problems we're faced with today because they're neither policymakers nor opinion leaders, but they're being blamed for it. And the very people who had the temerity, no matter which side of the political spectrum, are saying, we caused all these problems, now let us help resolve these problems. Well, A, you caused the problems and you've resolved nothing in the last 50 years to our betterment. So why should I believe you? But that's not what goes on in people's mind. How do we get to where we're at? And that's because I believe we're now living in what I call the rise of intellectual anarchy. What do I mean? To state that an unknown evolutionary principle for the survival of the fittest imbues us with a hardwired negative predisposition towards an inherent racism is not only false, but also erroneous, with adverse repercussions to social order and the personal well-being. It fuels what one of the greatest Western minds ushered in with the birth of modern science, and that's Francis Bacon, who I mentioned a few moments ago, and he identified four principles of the mind, that if you deal with all four of these principles, you are really not paying attention to the world around you. Because let's face it, who creates the policies? Who creates the laws? Who lobbies for the laws? Who writes the laws? Who writes and allows to be propagated all of the ways that we should behave? I'm only using one example today, just one, because no one's talked about it, and yet constantly we are told that this is what you must believe, and there are people on MSNBC, one was just fired over the weekend for these racist rants, and we see people who are creating a form of racism by acting as if they're somehow sympathetic as an anti-racist. But the person behind all this, whose work has been used, wrote a book called White Fragility and subsequent publications. Her name is Robin DiAngelo. And in my personal opinion, she has fallen to worshiping each of these bad notions that were laid out by Francis Bacon. On the one hand, DiAngelo sets up invisible barriers of division by reifying the idol of the tribe, the perpetuation of inbred tribal, family, racial, and group identities based upon survival characteristics, pitting one against the other, and all against the other groups. Well, this is something that, in her mind, she's imagined, and so are people competitors, or are they enemies, or are they friends? All you would have to do is take an honest look at history, and especially archaeology, and you would find that there are at least four separate times that we know of and can prove where civilization, one in northern Mexico, and another one in South America, but also one in the Middle East, where tens of thousands, and in one case over 100,000 people lived in harmony for over 3,000 to 4,000 years with no leaders. There was no artificial hierarchical order. People simply contributed what they could and what they were good at and what was needed for their own needs and for the common good. There's no warfare. And yet we completely exclude a major part of human history because it doesn't fit our scenario. And that's what happens also when you believe that someone who believes in the group they're with, and then they call it a tribe, and that forms the culture and what a person believes is right and wrong. Well, there are no perfect cultures, but cultures that have a way of imprinting the highest values that they can and make it available for people have made societies cohesive, functional, safe, and able to go forward. There should be an inner communication, an inner cooperation, because in all of nature, nature is always working in ways that we do not always understand, like Dr. Kruger in the film that I released 2 years ago called Dark Side of Tomorrow and Last Call for Tomorrow, subtitle. She was the first to discover that tree roots actually communicate with one another, that they had their own language. But until that time, no one believed it because it hadn't been proven. And yet even in the New York Times, there's an article which still doubts that. Well, which side of the argument are you coming down on if you're the mainstream media? What if we can show that many of the conditions that we have could be prevented by changing our lifestyle? All right. And then supporting that with good quality peer-reviewed science. So if you want to stay healthy and prevent disease, here's something. But then someone comes along and says, hold on a second. No. There's an all-meat diet, and it strengthens your immune system, and it's good for you, and it'll cause you to live a long life. Well, show me your evidence. Oh, you don't have that evidence. So you have a theory, a hypothesis, which is fine. And people want to take shortcuts or not change from bad habits. They can say, well, I'm following this because of a lot of other people are. So what if a newspaper's own journalist is so biased that they only print one as being possible and the other as being a kind of flaky? How many times have we given credit to people within movements with the movement itself, like chelation therapy and intravenous vitamin therapy and ozone therapy and homeopathy, were legitimate? No, never. Even when it's overwhelmingly supported by the peer-reviewed literature, the bias of a journalist will stop that from getting the promotion it needs. But promote a drug, everybody promotes the drugs because they're getting advertisement. So at what point do we realize that not only is there this reifying the idol of the tribe, but how much of our values and ethics have been compromised by being rewarded as a tribal policymaker, opinion leader? If we tell you to eat a certain restaurant, it's because we're getting kickbacks or a meal from it, or it's just what we believe is good. And what if the average person ate there and said, man, I don't like this food? Do we allow that into a review? So what we're dealing with here is we're dealing with people who embrace different aspects of this. And one of this is called the idol of the cave, the self-idolization. And in this case, I believe it's her own passions, enthusiasm, and ideology that is diametrically opposed to a deeper understanding, in my opinion, about the true nature and psychology of the human being. Consequently, D'Angelo doesn't venture outside her comfort zone, which is none other than the arena of academic intellectual foreplay and skewed scientific conjecture. How many individuals today have been fired from tenured positions, not because the faculty found that what they were teaching was wrong or how they were teaching was wrong, it was because some student who knows nothing about anything decided that they couldn't handle the depth of that conversation, didn't want that kind of reality put forward. They expected the institution to be a place where they feel safe and comfortable. Well, how can you have a place that feels safe and comfortable at the same time challenges constructs and concepts within any value system that could be wrong? You know, you might be believing in the wrong things. And the professor is there to share the best they can of how to become a critical thinker so you can make judgments for yourself. In the real world, you're going to have to. But no, even before you get to the real world, when you're still in the protective cocoon of your family and friends not allowing you to fail at anything, including taking responsibility for growing up at some age. Today, I guess it's in the 60s if you're in that generation, but certainly not as teens. But boy, you can make decisions that in a heartbeat have negative consequences after someone has spent their whole life trying to create an environment where people are not afraid to think deeper and to develop an intellectual discipline that allows them to focus on issues beyond the superficial. Recently, Barack Obama went out to, and Clinton and Trump went out to promote their different party candidates. And here was Barack Obama talking about, you know, this could be the end of democracy. And I'm thinking, did anyone ask him to address how he destroyed, along with Hillary Clinton, an entire country in Libya with tens of thousands of dead, millions displaced? The country was number one, now it's last in Africa. It's a failed country, but we got their oil and we got their gold. And we stopped him from having a gold denier and you working with other countries. Did anyone ask him that? Anyone in the media ever ask him that? The answer is no. And will they? They can't, because the tribe they belong to also supports, no matter what the outcome, the consequences of its leaders. And hence, whole individuals have to live with this kind of hidden awareness that, gee whiz, these people are maybe charismatic and fun to listen to, but they're deadly. But we don't go there, nor do we allow others to go there. And as a result, people like D'Angelo, in my opinion, they should look deeper. Referencing the Greek philosopher Heraclitus, men look for science, and this is what's important, in their own lesser worlds. And it was Francis Bacon who said, "And not in the common or greater world." In other words, the overly intellectual dramatically fails to perceive reality as it is. After all, when was the last time that a sociologist, a psychologist, artificial intelligence, transhumanism, automation person came to your house and spent a week? I want to live in your house for a week and see your discussions, how you make your ends meet with your budget, since one of you is out of a job because it was taken over by artificial intelligence. Another one is out of a job because you weren't willing to get vaccinated. And how did you survive? Because this allows us as policymakers and opinion leaders to better form an understanding of how what we're writing and what we're producing, like the New Work Economic Order and the Great Reset, so that when the time comes when we're going to say, you will own nothing and be happy about it, we'll have some confidence that will be true. Otherwise, we're completely distanced from you. We have no relationship to do. We don't live in your neighborhood. We're a different species today. We are the elite. And for us, race is unimportant. We don't care. And your politics is unimportant as well. We don't care. And who you vote for is immaterial. We control everything. We control the Council on Foreign Relations. We control many of the universities. We control the federal government and its agencies. We control the media. And we control an awful lot of legislators. So there's no downside to us being wrong about anything. Even right now, we're trying to prepare you that we're going to move on, lessons learned, by giving amnesty to everyone involved in this, the most destructive act in human history, and with the COVID vaccine mandates. But they won't come to your home. They don't care about who you are, how you live, what your struggles are. They don't care about you. And they are even angry if you value your family, if you value your culture, if you value your traditions, because they need to control you completely. And if anything, like a belief system that they're, you know, if you have a religious belief, they really don't like you. And they've said so. They've said you're worthless and useless. And by the way, someone else just said that over the weekend. Michael Moore talked about how you're stupid. 80 to 90 million Americans, I believe, was his exact words. And then he said it again. Well, you know, I'm sorry if you can't handle the fact you're stupid, something like that. You'll hear the clip. And yet, what has he actually contributed to the world outside of his own fame and fortune? And how often has he been wrong? And when was the last time Michael Moore said, you know something? I did a documentary praising Hillary Clinton, and it didn't go anywhere. But I'd never challenged her on what she did in Libya and laughed when Gaddafi was killed. I thought it was funny. And all the people who suffered, Barack Obama and me, we didn't care. And when all the when we overthrew Honduras in a coup, when we overthrew in Ukraine the democratically elected government back in 2014, that thousands of people were killed by the Azov Battalion, and Gloria Nuland did it, and we have it on tape. But that's not important. And so it's on no one's radar. It's not a talking point about why you should believe people who have consistently misdirected you and caused only pain and suffering in the world, and never anything beyond that, except for themselves. This is what happens when you are stuck in this idea of the idolization of certain beliefs or certain people within that belief system without looking at the truth of who they are and what the belief system is actually giving you. D'Angelo seems to cherish the idol of the marketplace, which Bacon associated with the perversion of discourse and the misapplication of words. The consequence is that discourse is thrown into confusion and leads others to a kind of a numberless, empty controversies and idle fancies. And finally, she embraces the idol of the theater. And Bacon defines this idol as a kind of infection of the mind by memes of dogmatic philosophies based upon erroneous laws. Yet the theatric idol holds true for all fads, for what Bacon called systems now in vogue. So today, it's not the quality of what you're presenting, it's whether or not it's in vogue. As a result, the number one thing in vogue today is going to the internet to get your, you know, TikTok infusion for a moment, rather than actually sitting and creating something and then trying to bring what you've created to the people. So where are critical thinkers? Where are critical doers? They exist. You would never know they exist because anything they're doing is constructive is hidden by those who are only there to tear things down. Negative at every turn. We only have to observe how in just a short period of time that the viral D'Angelo meme that all whites are born racist has become a fad and infected the minds of millions. D'Angelo writes, quote, "Yes, all whites are complicit in racism," end quote. Really? When you're talking about all whites, you're talking about all whites throughout history. You sure about that? Better do your homework first. But you didn't have to, because no one who wants to believe that people are bad or people are racist will challenge you, because now you've just been able to say that everybody of a race is racist. No matter what you do, you can't reverse that. In this narrative, your brain and genes are absolute. Any sense of yourself as a unique and sentient individual with a mind and consciousness, with the capacity to exert free will, to love and respect all races and ethnicities, is only a derivative of physical biological properties. In this materialistic view, there are no accommodations for anything one would consider as divine and sacred. Because if you start seeing what is divine and sacred in other people, then by its very extension, you will not be racist, because you see that all creatures are divine and sentient, and therefore it is better understanding what makes them unique and how we can relate to them and respect and honor their life as well as our own. And that's what makes a multicultural society so wonderful. That's why kids are not racist unless you teach them to be. And yet, all the accomplishments that have been made between the races have simply been shut aside. Well, how far we have de-evolved. Therefore, for Bacon, the only solution to smash the intellectualized idols of the mind for what they are, and then the biases that give rise to them, we must challenge this. We may better understand D'Angelo by placing her in a long chain of intellectual shenanigans that has dominated much scientific speculation and methodology for the past 110 years. Aside from the hard sciences, the life sciences and humanities attempt to study a subject by turning their back on the actual object of inquiry. All neuroscience and brain research and behavior and cognitive psychology today continue in the shadow of John Watson. His behavioralism back in 1910. Watson was a true card-carrying scientific materialist. He was a reductionist. He was like Immanuel Kant. And he's credited with killing and burying the introspectionist movement pioneered by America's great early psychologist, William James. If you haven't read William James, I would hope you would do so now. So Watson's behavioralism swept through early psychology like a tsunami. It was so thorough that you can no longer find introspectionalism's gravesite. Therefore, for over a century, scientists have been trying to study and understand the mind by not looking directly at it. Here's where empiricism comes in. It is like trying to study a sunrise on the horizon by turning west. Certainly, you can learn something about the sun by observing its reflections, the appearance of shadows, the color changes in the clouds, in a dark sky turning blue. But this is knowledge acquired solely through inferences instead of direct observation. You're only observing manifestations, reflections, displays, and correlations of the sunrise. At the end of the day, you know a lot about clouds and almost nothing about the sun because you're looking west. This is what medicine, genetics, neuroscience, evolutionary biology, and the pretenders to the humanities are doing. Simply looking at people's behavior and brain states. These are inferences D'Angelo applies similarly to derive her opinion about inherent racism. It is based upon inferential assumptions. None of that has ever been proven factual, that you're born a racist. And yet, people assumingly who have some level of intelligence, and even those who are knowledgeable, don't want to be called out. As a result, they begin to live in this strange Byzantine universe. If you've lived your life as an abolitionist, defending the lives of others, especially people of color or minorities, it doesn't matter. In their mind, you're still a racist. As many of her critics have pointed out, she can be correctly accused of basing her hypothesis on the Kafka trap, a no-win scenario, because anything said in one's defense, no matter how true, is still an admission of guilt. It's much like a Stalin show trial where guilt is predetermined. Pursuing higher humanist and spiritual values of compassion and loving kindness and joyful empathy and equanimity, the fullness of the human capacity towards goodness and genuine well-being are not qualities found in the woke lexicon. So it's the entire woke culture of the identity politics, the cancel culture, the wokeism. All of these are fads, but they're intellectually depraved fads. They're the bottom-feeding fads for the non-thinkers, those who need someone to blame for what they feel or don't. They need to know that they do not have to measure up to a higher spiritual level, but rather look at everything from the dark side. And boy, is your perception of life negative when the axiom of the medium is the message. The masses who embrace white fragility, superficiality, also have the tendency to focus on what is most obvious while simultaneously ignoring or missing altogether the deeper and more subtle changes happening over a period of time. On its surface, such superficiality may appear to be correct and proper. However, what lurks behind the mere appearances and display of images in D'Angelo's message is deleterious and carries the potential to unfurl catastrophic and unintended consequences. How often do you have to call someone, no matter what the discussion and no matter how irrelevant it is, a racist? Until then, it's the easiest word to use when you disagree with someone. You're a racist. But race has nothing to do with the topic we're discussing. It doesn't matter. You're a racist. Now, do you think that person is going to approach you and apologize? Do you think they're going to have an epiphany and see the wrongness of their thinking? No. Entire segments of our society today are embracing this one negative virtue of wokeism. And this is just part of wokeism. And I'm of the opinion that probably the largest majority of voters out there are independent, but they at one time were tied to the Republican or Democratic Party and saw how corrupt and vile they both were and became independent. Yeah, you've got about 20% more registered Democrats than you have Republicans, but you have far more independents than you have Democrats and Republicans together. So if they find their voice, and if they're sick to death of wokeism and identity politics, and actually want to see a world where people live together in harmony, where they build a better future for themselves, where they respect each other's uniqueness and look for solutions without having to condemn and to try to destroy people, then maybe we have a future. If not, we'll see what happens when people keep their voices silent versus when they share them. A lot more to come. But we're now going to shift gears. I want you to hear what Michael Moore has to say, because Michael really represents an awful lot of the corporate Democrat, Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, and Barack Obama mindset. And you might agree or disagree with him. And But I want you to hear it. Let's go to the clip.
And I want to also add your voice to what happened in 2016, because you, from the get-go, were saying Trump would win. And that was something that, you went against the New York Times and the different polls and everybody else. Was like, there's no way. Even analysts that on election night were like, what just happened? So you had that. Why are you so optimistic in general? What are the tailwinds that you are feeling that keeps you thinking that Democrats are going to do okay in these midterms?
Well, first of all, I don't live in a bubble. You know, I spend a great deal of my time in the Midwest. I travel the country making my films, whatever. So, I mean, I pay attention. I listen to people. And it wasn't just the 16 election. The night I won the Oscar and I go on the stage and I just want to say that it's the fourth night of the Iraq War and we're not going to find any weapons of mass destruction. I got booed off the stage, and I was thinking, well, why did I say that? Because I'm not a weapons inspector. What do I know? What do I know? I'm just like a lot of basic everyday Americans, pay attention to what's going on. And it was clear to me in the Midwest that Trump was going to win. The only way he wasn't going to win is if we got the vote out for Hillary, and she lost.
And I want to also add your voice.
Okay, it goes on where he talks about 80 to 90 million Americans are stupid. So exactly how do you think that sounds to anyone who didn't vote for Clinton? Because what you're really saying is if you didn't vote for Clinton, then you're a racist. You're a white supremacist. You're a stupid person. Now, that is exactly what has been going on for so long now. And people are quiet, and they're saying, that's not me. How many unionists who were betrayed by the Clintons are, decided to vote for Trump? Not because they like Trump. Trump is very hard to like. I don't find anything good about Trump. But because they had been lied to so many times by smooth-talking politicians. They would talk to you and say, we're for the union. We support the union. The union now says support us. And then turn around and bring in NAFTA. And GATT and CAFTA and offshore over almost 30 million jobs over the last 40 years. And yet still ask people to believe, don't believe your eyes, don't believe what we've done to you, believe what I'm saying now. But a person says, well, hold on a second, everything you've been promising, you've done just the opposite. That's true of both parties. So you see, this is just one of the individuals who goes out and says, because I'm a good corporatist liberal Democrat, follow my advice. And what exactly is your advice? Why aren't you out promoting universal health care? No, it was Obamacare, which was purely a privatizing way to benefit those in power. And why didn't you protest and march against the war in Iraq or Syria or Honduras? Those were all under Obama and Clinton, and yet you praise Clinton. You want her to become the most powerful person in the world, and look what she's done with the power that she had. Now, I could mention anyone else, not Jean Kilpatrick. I could mention a lot of other people who said as ambassador to the UN, but this is why politics is so down and dirty, and the people going forward to talk on behalf of a given party. How for those who look behind the curtain, it's just a pantomime, and it degrades the whole conversation. So before you talk about how stupid, 80 to million Americans are, you might want to ask yourself what you hate about yourself that you're willing to project upon other people. I want to say goodbye to our WBA audience. We're going to continue on to the top of the show, and you're going to have a chance to call in now at 888-874-4888, because I'm taking on every one of the woke issues to try to offer some semblance of a response other than the guttural attacks that they're doing against so many people, whole groups of people, without ever once speaking to you or knowing anything about you, but they're willing to judge you, including canceling your life and making your life miserable. So we'll see. And Rodney, if we get any calls up, please let me know, because I'd be happy to hear what people
have
to say.
No calls yet, guys.
Okay, 888-874-4888 is our number. Oh, I'm going to, if we can confirm these figures are accurate, that the CDC has just been sued to give us, I'll share this with you on tomorrow's program. I also want to mention that we have a special, and I'm actually going to, well, I'm going to hold the special till tomorrow because it's going to take me a little bit of time to explain it. I have some new products coming out, by the way, and I'll be sharing them. But a couple things. One is I'm going to be hiring one or two people to do research editing. You have to have experience in research, and you have to have experience in editing, because I purchased back many of my best-selling books, and I'm going to update them. These are big books, and they're important books, and like the Complete Encyclopedia of Natural Healing and some others. And I can't do it myself because I'm just finishing up two new books. I'm writing a sequel to Living in the Moment, Prescription for the Soul, so part two is coming. And I'm also doing a brand new book. It's almost finished. In fact, it's just about ready to go to press on juicing and anti-aging. I have another one on the immune system. And I'm just finishing up. In fact, this week I'm finishing up principal photography in England. I'm filming a person there on what causes us to believe that we are mentally unbalanced. Rupert Sheldrake will be the person I'm filming. I've been filming nonstop for the last 4 months, so that film's going to be coming out shortly, and I'll do a premiere in New York. Also, I'm looking for person to work down here in our archive. This is my film archive I have down here in editing films. And if you have background in editing and you like to sit and watch a lot of interesting commentary, and these are going to be free to the public. We have 70 of them up already if you go to GaryNoll.com. But I've got thousands to put up. You'll call on either of those jobs. You'll call Sharon at 646-926-5422. 646-926-5422. We don't have any calls coming in, so we'll end our program now. And I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.